Ahem. La 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 la. A word to the wise. We're an explicit podcast tackling content with adult themes as well as entering spoiler territory if you aren't caught up with us. Finish The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie. That's a demand.
Hey there, this is Cross.
I'm DJ, today.
And I'm Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
And we are Words and Whiskey. We're so glad to have you back, Aaron. And it's nice to have someone else in the intro. It's great. But we're a podcast for veteran and officers like we tackle fiction novels, love to talk about what we're drinking. You should think of us in your intoxicatingly Lee Book Club.
You could not have wanted to finish that faster than...
See, I just re-listened to The Blade Itself on 1.25 speed, and you just said that faster.
Yes. I can't wait for people. There are some people that speed up our podcast. I'm like, totally get it. Definitely understand. We're long form or whatever. But that is going to just like throw them off right away and be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Turn it down.
Ah, turn it down. Turn it down. Aaron, we're so happy to have you on the show for this wrap up to discuss The Blade Itself.
Happy to be here.
I'm having a particularly proud father moment as I have had you both read this series or asked you both to read this series. So this is just a great pride moment for me. Yes.
Your children who are older than you. Actually, how old is Peach?
PJ is younger than I am.
Oh, wait till baby.
Yeah. I mean, 6 months, 7 months, whatever. But
that could work. That.
But now do multiple podcasts get to call you Daddy Cross?
No, Daddy. We're not doing that.
You did Daddy. It yourself.
No.
I love it.
I felt more like it was a religious cult children thing, not like a physical, literal children thing.
I don't think it's literal children for them either.
Yeah, very, very good point. But today is obviously our wrap-up episode talking about The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie, the beginning of the first law, the beginning of the longest series that we will ever cover on this podcast, probably. Because there's so many damn books. But I'd love to start off with what we're drinking tonight. PJ, what are you having?
I made myself a double Mai Tai. I started making a Mai Tai for myself and my wife, and then I realized, oh, she has to leave at 3 a.m. for work. So
it's wife now.
I'm making both of them. Or I'm drinking both of them.
Wife.
Yeah. He's a wife guy.
It was fiance during Jade Legacy.
That's true.
Redbone, green bone.
Time has progressed and things went well.
Redbone, green bone.
I was looking at the books and the one Jade Two wore bone, is red. Bone. I'm looking at the red one. It's like, fuck. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I'm drinking PJ. A High Noon, grapefruit style.
Grapefruits, always good.
100 calories.
Literally my favorite. Yeah. Oh, and you just had like a massive, massive weekend out, right?
Yes, I went to Miami, and I was not the oldest person in the club, which was surprising.
I hear Miami's good for that, but yeah. Other than that,
was Pitbull.
There was
the other
also
one?
A tornado watch while I was in the club, and there were all these young people from an EDM festival that came in to where we were because of the tornado watch. And I made a joke like, I'm not afraid of a tornado. I'm Dorothy. And these 21-year-old boys that I was talking to did not know what I was talking about. And I was like, they've never seen The Wizard of Oz.
Or they were just so high.
Well, yeah, they were on a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
They all had like blinky backpacks and ponchos on. And they were in full festival mode. But anyways.
Fair.
I was like, oh, wow. The youths don't know about Dorothy.
They don't understand Dorothy. It's not like that was part of our generation.
Right. And it's just, I mean, I'm from Kansas, so of course it's part of like my life, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like a statue to Dorothy like, down the street
is
from
there?
Your house, right?
Toto. It's the statues it's of Toto.
You salute Toto on your way to work.
PJ, you should know better.
Amazing. Amazing. I am having a very similar cocktail to what I had last week on the show, PJ. and dear listener, I guess. But it's effectively, it's that same cocktail, but I swapped out the vodka, which is what I think I made it with, for rye instead to kind of play up those herby notes. I haven't tried it yet, but...
Herby.
Delicious.
It was really good before. Oh, it's so much better. Yeah. Do it with rye. Ignore everything I said last week. This is better. But it's like a black tea whiskey sour, basically.
Ooh.
Super good. Yeah, cool. Well, I'd love to get into this kind of right away. PJ, I think we've poured shots. So cheers.
Shot, I'm not ready for that yet.
All right, because PJ doesn't have...
What are you drinking?
PJ doesn't have a shot glass.
It looks like a giant beer. Oh, it just has a black top. Mm-hmm. That's a cool bottle.
It is a cool bottle. New Riff, single barrel. Probably shouldn't be shooting that, but you know.
It's probably pretty good.
It's really
good. Sipper.
Yeah. So I'd love to jump right into this and get both of y'all's thoughts on this book, the beginning of one of my favorite trilogies of all time.
Bad.
Go ahead, PJ.
Just bad. Yeah, didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Did you both read it, not audiobooked?
I did both.
Oh, you did? Okay. I exclusively audiobooked. And Cross is the one who told me to read this, like, what, 2 years ago now?
Mm-hmm.
We've been friends for so long.
Yeah.
But the reread was, like, even more fun. I forgot how hilarious this whole book is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's dark, it's sad, it's brutal, it's so funny.
I was laughing my ass off.
Yeah.
Does the comedy maintain throughout the series? I assume so.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it seems like a writing style as opposed to, like, just tone of the book.
I like all the, like, sarcastic inner thoughts. Like, that's how I live.
That's how I think through everything. Are you Glockta? Is that what you're saying, Aaron? Are you suggesting?
Yes.
Last week, I did a brutal leg day and then could barely stand up a couple days later, and I felt like Glockta walking up to to my office. Trying to
shamble
up
the
stairs.
Did you knock your teeth out, too?
What was that?
I forgot. I said, did you knock your teeth out, too?
Oh, yeah. Always.
I forgot, reading the next couple books, I forgot that Glockta was only like 34 or something, or 32. Because mm-hmm. he seems like such an old man. You know,
it really does.
So, bless his heart. But
yeah,
I love the book.
Shocking fact.
Hilarious. It's exciting. I flew through it.
Yeah, especially on a reread. I'm fascinated by this question. I'm going to ask it again because we had another conversation with a friend that went very differently. So I'm curious. Do you find, Aaron, this book plotless by any means, by any stretch?
I guess there is like a lot of setup, but I also know what's going to happen. I think that could it even be called a book if it was plotless? Who said it wasn't PJ?
No. Okay. It's not PJ. And it's kind of a prevailing thing with this first book, but
I think there's actually like four or five very distinct plots with, you know, the main characters of each of those distinct plots, and then they will eventually maybe come together. I don't know, PJ.
Seems like that's already happening.
And yeah, at the end of this book, they're like, let's all go to England.
Except so, Glockta, because he's got to go over to Degoska. But yeah.
Go be tortured again. Just kidding.
I am how this feels bluffs. On a reread, because I intend to. I think I'll probably blow through it again pretty quickly. And knowing how different Red Rising felt compared to how we structure and break down our episodes between those two different like ways I've consumed it, I'm willing to bet that this one's going to feel even more starkly different.
And plotful.
Plotful. PJ, I'd love to hear. Did you like the book? Did you enjoy your time?
Of course I liked the book. Yes, I very much like the book.
Oh, I thought we left him with bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we did. That was what we let him
after I've been lead off with. Gushing over this book every single week. Yeah, I really liked it. I have a feeling it's going to become a favorite.
first intro to Joe Abercrombie too, right?
I would imagine. I mean, for most people it is. I think Pete. Yeah.
You tell me what you mean.
Fair point. He's only written one other series right now. And the only other work that he's really done that you could pick up is like most of the film editing stuff that he's done outside of his one short in Love, Death, and Robots that he wrote, which is PJ's technical first experience with Joe Abercrombie.
Which one is that?
It's the one with the rats. It's The Rat War. Mm.
I need to read that. I'm going to write it down.
It's a short story. It's not a short story. It's a Netflix show. It's like a little 15-minute animated thing.
Oh.
And every single episode is by a different director, different writing team, not connected in any way.
It's three seasons? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tight.
It's super good.
But yeah. Yeah, it's in the third season. It's something to do with the rats, and I forget what it's specifically called. But you'll see like little rats on the cover of that episode, and it's great. It evokes all of the things that Joe Abercrombie does best in like a little animated form. It was also the first time that him and Tim Miller worked together. Tim Miller is directing the adaptation of Best Served Cold that is forthcoming, that Joe also wrote. So we are getting an adaptation, unlike Red Rising, which is sitting in some kind of development hell. So
when I first started rereading this book, I was thinking of the characters in Best Served Cold.
Mm.
So
interesting.
I won't give any spoilers, but I was like, yeah. Oh, wait, I thought it was a different person. You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah. Yep, yep, yep. No, I totally get it. Yeah, there's a lot that I'm super excited to just get further in this series and not need to dance around PJ anymore to talk about my favorite book ever. But because that's been a tough.
Is your favorite Best Served Cold?
Oh, Best Served Cold is my favorite book that I've read in my adult life. Yeah, by far. I love it.
I will just say this is reminding me of my I can't remember if it was my actual first interaction with you, Aaron, but the first time that I was on your show. Or you were on our show. I can't remember what came first. But
the chicken or the egg?
Just everybody dancing around me not knowing anything about the rest of the series.
It's hard for me because I typically just say whatever comes to my brain.
Which is why the fresh read was good. It was good.
Yes. And you were like, stop after the first book. Do not keep going.
Just a reminder, just the first one. But I'm glad. I want to give just a moment to, you know, laud praise onto Stephen Pacey. He is the best audiobook narrator.
He has so many voices that when you're in it, you think it's actually different people instead of one actor.
It's so well done.
And then do you notice that Glockta's inner voice is like his voice before he lost his teeth?
He doesn't have a lisp.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the smallest thing, but he doesn't lisp any of it. And that's like, oh man, that would be so tough.
Yeah. Stephen Pacey is the goat. And then I also like in the audiobook, since we're on that, the moments of the sound music with the chains and like it's at big transitions or at the beginning and end of the book.
Mm-hmm. And all the park breaks. Such a small thing, but it's like a cool signal internally to be like, okay, we're moving on.
It gets you in the mood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like creaky death floorboards and chains and drums.
It's almost like you're on a pirate ship.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, man, Stephen Pacey like blew my mind open. I hadn't listened to The First Law back when we were doing Red Rising, and I did at that point. And that's when I went from going, Tim Gerard Reynolds is the best audiobook narrator I've ever heard, to, I'm going to have to pull that back. Because TGR is still great, but
I have a few faves. Who narrated the Dragon book? Evan Winter.
That's really a good question. I forget. Rage of Dragons, what's it called? But
he like fit that book, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Prentice Onayemi, who also, I believe, did The Sunlit Man, PJ. I believe it's the same.
Okay. Gotcha.
Voice actor.
That was By the way, speaking of TGR, I was like on TikTok, book talk, and I was like trying to find a new book to listen to, and then there were too many recommendations. So I just searched on Audible for Tim Jared Reynolds, and now I'm listening to The Theft of Swords.
Oh.
By Michael J. Sullivan.
That is, I was going to say, a lot of people love the Ryeria books. I forget if that's the first one.
It's volume one of the Ryeria Revelations.
Okay, because there's Revelation, Chronicles, and then like two or three other series. I don't really know the order. I haven't read them yet. So let me know if they're good. Hopefully they are.
I did interrupt. I was on chapter three, and then I went to the blade itself. So
fair. So we're going to run through a lot of these different characters, of course, and kind of talk through them. But I'm curious to start maybe with favorites, and then we can kind of break down, you know, each of them independently, talk through some of the different traits and things like that. I'd love to hear everyone's favorite major character.
Beach? PG? Okay, can I just say, I feel like Logan is, like, hot.
Did you just ask if you can keep it PG?
No, I was saying PG. You're PG. You go.
Oh.
So, okay. It's hard, but I have to say Glockta's the one who, like, leaves me, like, smiling and laughing the most.
Yeah, no doubt on that front. I definitely agree.
But second would be Logan. And not the Bloody Nine. The nice one.
The nice Logan. Not the mean one.
Yes.
I think I'm in perfect agreement with you for one and two. Glockta than Logan.
I am a diabolical sucker for Giselle's perspective. And I love Logan. And I love Glockta. And I love Pharaoh. Glockta is an irreplaceable character. There's no one else, you know, like him on the planet in terms of any other book that I've ever read, ever. It's so unique, so different, so incredible. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much impossible to not say Glockta, but as my, like, you know, dark horse counterpoint devil's, you know, argument, I'm gonna put Giselle, just float our little Nepo baby out there.
I was like, he's such a whiny little bitch. Giselle down Luther.
he just wants to be loved, you know? Like
he's so spoiled. And he's very useless. Spoiled. Like, at least Logan can, like, protect you.
True. And
Glockta can scare your enemies away.
Mm-hmm.
Can we do minor characters now, because I wrote one down?
Yeah. Who's your favorite minor character?
It's Prince Ladislav, and he goes capital.
Capital.
Capital mount. the way Stephen Pacey says it.
That's pretty good.
That's a good one.
He like says it as if he's like extremely drunk. Capital. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason why.
I can't not say Brother Longfoot. Brother Longfoot is my favorite.
No, he drives me crazy. Like, shut up.
That's why I love
And I know, and so- this is not a spoiler, he gets more annoying.
I figured.
Oh man, I love Brother Longfoot. I love every time that silly goof opens his mouth. It's just so ridiculous.
And maybe it's Steven Spacey's voice for him, but he's just like,
yeah,
I don't know, blabbering.
I think I have to give my favorite minor character award to the honorable, the dead, poorly the weakest.
That's a sad. Good one.
That was a good call. You had to bring down the mood, huh?
Did PJ know that he was going to die?
I did.
Did you guess?
I don't remember if I guessed it or not.
No. No, you thought the band was good. You thought they were going to be good together.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard up there in the north. You can't do anything good for other people because they'll cut your head off.
And they were just trying to help, you know, collectively.
Fucking flatheads.
Mm-hmm. The fucking flatheads. Yeah, that brings us maybe to just talking about, and we'll kind of break these off into sex and the plot lines and kind of talk about them. That brings us to kind of talking about Dogman and the crew. So at the very start of the story, of course, Logan goes over the cliff, and then midway through the first part, after believing this whole crew of people that he's kind of haunted by, like, ghosts, to be dead, We jump into one of their perspectives and we're kind of brought forward into a conversation with the Dogman, with Black Dow, with Tull Duru Thunderhead, Harding Grimm, Forley the Weakest, and Rudd Three Trees, all of whom make up this sort of merry band of barbarians.
I don't think they're merry.
I take it back. Forley is not my favorite. Tull Duru Thunderhead is my favorite.
Because that's you.
Yeah.
Is he the one who like never talks?
No, Harding Grimm never talks.
Okay. And then he randomly is like, that's a tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every once in a while, he'll just have like a two word moment.
That's right.
Mostly grunts as acknowledgement. What'd you guys make of the Dogman sort of story through the North, though? The group getting introduced kind of to the Northman culture that way. How do we feel about the North on the whole?
It reminds me of Game of Thrones, kind of. It's like tough in the North. It's colder. There's monsters like the Flatheads or the White Walkers. And you have to like have a band of brothers to survive. So I kind of was drawing those parallels. But I like how tough they all are.
I was always like thrown like initially and immediately thrown off on like the scale of things. So any of the descriptions in the North and talking about like, oh, this is the biggest, like the biggest walls we've ever seen and things like that are immediately like hard to gauge as far as size actually goes because of Logan's experience in the Agrion.
Adjua.
And like being flabbergasted by the size and scale of everything. So that was always in my brain for some reason. Like I couldn't ever turn that off in their descriptions of what was going on around them, and knowing that it is completely skewed, but I don't know by how much.
Well, then who picks up, what's his name? Who's the other wizard that's friends with Baez?
Yulwey.
When Yulwey's talking about where he's from, and he's just like, you've never heard of it because it's so far away. Like, it's almost like the whole world isn't explored.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or known. There's no maps that go that far.
I've thought about that a lot.
Peach has got stuck on that a little bit, actually.
I need a globe.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't help that the place is called the Circle of the World either. So you're like, wait, is it a globe or is it what's going on here?
Is it a disc?
Where he's disc? From actually in this same like realm of existence?
Oh.
I don't know.
But yeah, I like the Northmen. They're smelly.
They're smelly. They got funny names. The best thing that I think that Joe gets to play with this whole series is the named men is just always like a moment of humor. Like what was the most recent one, PJ? Was it Bad Enough?
Oh, Bad Enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stone Splitter at Bad Enough. But like Bad Enough is like just perfect for like a name for a guy. Cause you're like, oh yeah, he's bad enough. And he's just a throwaway villain. It's literally mm-hmm. pitch perfect.
Yeah.
There are always moments for levity and story. And, you know,
what was the comparison that I made? They're like Borderlands.
Borderlands. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like
what?
Just minor video game, like bosses.
Oh.
Is kind of how they present themselves.
I picture them all kind of like Vikings, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like they're the way they look and dress.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally agree with that. They're, I mean, like you were saying with Game of Thrones, all the Northmen and the brothers on the wall, like dressed in furs and yeah.
That's just how I picture it.
Yeah. Yeah, I get more like the thick brutish like Scotsman, you know, vibe.
Wearing than, skirts.
Like, but also like that ties in with like Viking aesthetic and whatnot. Uh-huh. Obviously, this isn't like a monoculture or anything, but yeah, it's they're pretty sweet. I also love, and this gets into Logan a little bit, and we can chat about him too. But I love their penchant for like phrases as well, like catchphrases. All mm-hmm. of them, and Logan especially, just has like a dozen different catchphrases at any moment that and aphorisms that are just running in his head. Did you guys have any particular, I mean, Aaron sent me one or two today, so I know that Aaron has a favorite or two.
I'm at work.
But BJ, did you also have any favorites?
Say one thing about Logan Nine Fingers. Say he has to piss.
Piss boy! Piss boy, piss boy.
It back. It made it back.
I also love that, like, once Nine Fingers is over the edge, his band is, like, quoting things that, like, Logan used to say, you know, thinking he's back to the mud. But my favorite, I think, is once you've got a task to do, it's better to do it than to live with the fear of it. Because it's true.
That is definitely maybe the most like real world of the quotes. And it is definitely the most applicable for sure. Because like you can never have too many knives, you know, like, I don't know, I'm just not going to go carrying around a bunch of knives.
Yeah. Or also like the you have to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I just agree with all of these quotes.
You have to be realistic about these things. Yeah. He's a wonderful, wonderful little chapbook of chicken noodle soup for the Northman soul.
Yeah. Know? He's a sweet boy.
Yeah.
Until he becomes the bloody knight. And yeah. Then he does that. I can't actually like put my middle finger down and raise my other fingers, but he like mm-hmm. smiles through the gap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job, PJ.
Ridiculous.
My ring finger has to go with it.
It's some punk rock hands. Aaron's the bloody eight.
Yeah. Bloody eight.
So that brings up an interesting question. Perhaps, and we can spend a lot more time talking about Logan too beyond the aphorisms, but brings up the question of the Bloody Nine, right? Like, what is the Bloody Nine? PJ, what were kind of your thoughts around this sort of beast, as it were?
So, I have several thoughts, one of which is something that we agreed that we probably shouldn't talk about in our text messages earlier today.
We can talk about that here. We'll just give a little spoiler warning, you know, around it.
I mean, I'll just say that interesting conversation. I don't think I have to say anything to spoil Red Rising to say like there is a very clear comparison that I want to make within the Red Rising universe, and it feels very similar. Feels even more.
I'm trying to think of what you're
darkly like. These are two different characters than even the one that you know I'm talking about.
I still don't know.
See, this is why I'm saying we'll just put up a spoiler warning. That's fine. Just a little spoiler warning for a moment. We're going to talk about Red Rising. PJ, fire loose cannon.
Darrow and the Reaper being two very different
I think
characters.
This is different.
I think it's different too. I think it's...
Darrow doesn't like fight off a possession of like a demon and then disappear for a while. He's still in there.
I think he kind of does, though. He doesn't do it by
like
magical means and by like an external force, but the farther that they get into warfare, the more like truly separated those two personalities are. But I don't think it's like a magical thing,
yeah,
which I think is kind of where I'm leaning in this realm.
With Darrow, that's yeah, like it would happen to any human who was killing everybody.
Yeah.
That would happen to anybody.
Anybody.
Ross, so you have two personalities. Who's your other guy? Wait, did I ask that question to myself?
Have you been killing people?
Not lately.
Yeah.
The swamp got full.
Are you saying you're Shrek?
Yes. Yeah, that is my other personality.
Get off my swamp.
I'm Shrek. No, that was I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but that's like a callback to like our first couple of episodes. There was a kill 'em and bury 'em in the swamp joke that I think still lives in those early episodes. Anyway,
how the fuck do you remember that? What,
PJ? How do you not?
It's PJ, been 200 episodes, Cross.
PJ, that's why we have Cross and Ben, because they remember shit, and we don't have to.
Yeah, that's true. I barely remember what happened the last episode.
Right. Okay, so back to Logan Nine Fingers. I think that it's like a possession. Like he talks to the spirits. He's kind of like maybe a vessel for the other side. And the Bloody Nine wants to kill everybody. And it's almost like a magical power because he can get like hacked in the back and he's like, yes, more, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, it feels very much like a situation written around the sort of barbarian class abilities from Dungeons and Dragons and then fleshed out to be to fit this world, but it works like a barbarian does for sure. Like half damage and just extra damage dealt, or half damage taken, extra damage dealt, stuff like that.
I don't know what that means.
That's okay.
You're our audience stand-in, Aaron.
So, as far as I understand, and Crossland, correct me if I'm wrong, when yep. Joe Abercrombie was writing this book, Logan Ninefingers, or whatever character became Logan Ninefingers, was a Dungeons and Dragons barbarian character that he had.
He imagined him like a Dungeons okay. and Dragons character. It was not one that he had played, but he gotcha. Was like, he wanted to write a story about a barbarian because he didn't think that there were that many good ones.
Gotcha.
So and that's where like the original idea came from.
And one of the main features of the barbarian class is rage, where they see red basically and they become killing machines. They take less damage, they deal more damage. And basically what happens in the Bloody Nine is how okay, those characters work.
Have you seen Jekyll and Hyde, the musical?
No.
I don't think I've ever seen the musical, no. I know the story.
I've read
kind
Jekyll
of.
And Hyde? I've not seen the Jekyll and Hyde musical.
It's kind of like that. Like, he becomes Hyde. It's a different person. Mm-hmm. And he, like, has no memory of it. Because you can feel him fighting it off, just like Dr. Jekyll does. He's like, no, no, no. You know, don't kill everybody. But
yeah,
that's what I think. He's Jekyll.
It seemed like he was fighting off getting out of it. Like, he was pretty excited to go into it.
I don't think. No, when he starts
I don't
going
think
into
Logan
it,
was. Yeah.
Logan is like, no, not again. He's like,
yeah,
it's been
you're right.
so long.
You're right.
And then Hyde is like, wah, ah, 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 ah. That's what he does in the musical.
Neither want to swap. Because he was like, no, I thought I had more time. Like, or no, not so soon, whatever.
Yeah.
When it faded.
I'm, as far as like Logan goes, I'm pretty torn on this. I feel like there is something to the fact that, you know, he's got this incredibly unique ability to talk to spirits and to like breathe them in and breathe fire, you know, and like do that whole thing. Like he does at the very beginning of the book. And like that is a fun thing that like connects him, I think, in some way. But you can't help but wonder if this is like just a segment of his personality that he's adopted over time, or if it is a demon, you know. And I think that's some of the allure of the stories is like, do you ever know? Will you ever know? You know, does it matter? Does it matter? You know,
I think that the fact that the scene where he's talking to the spirits and then nothing really comes of that, like nothing else happens with that for the rest of the book until, and maybe not, but presumably until the Bloody Nine shows up. Like, I felt like that was sort of the initial, like, okay, this character is in touch with some extra spiritual parts of the world that most characters aren't. I don't know.
Yeah.
It felt intentional in that sense to pay off in the Bloody Nine chapter.
Sure. Yeah.
But
I also, love that for you.
Something I want to bring up. The Bloody Nine himself. The name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if I brought this up last episode or not, but I should have if I didn't. Did he get that name after or before he lost his finger? Because it feels like a different person. But it also feels like this is something that should have existed within him for his entire like military career. And he fairly recently, seemingly, lost his finger.
No, I think he hasn't had his finger for a long time.
Okay.
Why else would his name be Logan Nine Fingers?
Well, that's when he got named, I guess.
Cross, you look like you know something, but I feel like you... How would you even know? They don't tell you.
But we know, there is we a know short he story. Lost his finger.
Oh, there is?
We know he lost his finger while he was fighting in Bethod's army.
I drink wasn't and like I know things.
That long ago.
Yeah, very true. That PJ is a very it's a good question to ponder, right? And it does beg the question of like where and or when did the name become associated with the man? Did the man come before the name? But at the very least, before his legend spread, you know, mm-hmm. he had to lose his finger.
Or before he was named, a named man?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Before the legend of the Bloody Nine spread.
Before we move off of Logan, I want to say my favorite moment was...
Yeah, do it.
When he's, like, gawking at the city, he's, like, out on his own, and this, like, person walks by, and he's looking up at the statue, and he goes, Baez, friend of mine. And the person's like, ah! Like, fucking psycho. Friend of mine.
That's so good.
Yeah, that guy.
They're like, so, that person lived 800 years ago.
I want to know what the state of like newspapers or like the spread of information is within this city. It seems not that good based on some other aspects like West not realizing that Roose was tortured and and gave up the Mercer Guild. But I want to know, like, if it comes out that Baez, like, if it comes out to the masses that Baez was here with, like, a barbarian and another, like, mage, like, what does that guy think? Like, holy shit, I ran into that guy on the street. He was a fucking weirdo talking about Baez and his statue.
To me, it seems like they don't have a press or anything. Like, it's all kind of word of mouth, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the city,
yeah,
to
we're
me
definitely
seems
pre-industrial.
Like, yeah. It also seems like the city was thriving in Baez's time, and now it's like defunct and falling apart. They're like going into the dark ages. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're not upkeeping the House of the Maker.
Or the university.
The university.
The university, yeah. I guess they can't get into the House of the Maker to upkeep.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, but like even the guard
pretty well.
No one's cleaning it.
Yeah, it seems to keep itself upright and also infinite pretty well. So, mm-hmm. yeah, the House of the Maker is definitely something, and maybe we'll just lump that in with like the whole conversation around Baez. But yeah, Logan is an astonishingly great character mixed with those wonderful aphorisms, a heart of gold in a brutal world too, for the most part. You know, like really kind of striving, but realistic nonetheless, but like saving Malekith Quai and like really kind of working to be kind of a better man in a lot of ways.
Crossland, mm-hmm. he's realistic because you have to be realistic about these things.
But I feel like he's like recently trying to become a better man. It's like he's trying to make amends for all the people he's murdered and left behind, you know?
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
He's a sweet boy.
No, that's exactly kind of where I was going with it. Like he's recently reformed, right? As mm-hmm. as noted, I think especially in his conversation with West, right? And like West doesn't believe that this man next to him could have been the Bloody Nine because in part, like a legend, unbelievable. This guy's really brutal. You don't match. And at the same time, like Logan is trying not to match that old name, that old expectation.
Say one thing about Logan Nine Fingers. Say he's a sweet boy.
Say he's a sweet boy with a lot of knives.
Well, you can never have too many knives.
You can never have too many knives. Still alive. Still alive.
That's what I say when I'm hungover.
Still alive. Yeah, just a crazy, crazy character overall, and then to revert into the Bloody Nine in that moment of intense stress and need and whatnot is something else. So moving on from him, perhaps we swing over to, we've done our two Northmen. Let's swing down to Pharaoh before we kind of talk about the Union on the whole. And I think we'll kind of tackle all those at once. Pharaoh's an interesting character in the fact that she's introduced so late comparatively in the story. New POV thrown at us just at the beginning of part two, basically escaping the Gurkish and everything that's going on over in Gurkul, seemingly a like slave concubine to the emperor as well, which is sort of a brutal life and living. Very unique perspective. How did you guys feel about Pharaoh?
Felt like she's pretty one shade for most of it until she's like saving Logan. Then you're like, oh, maybe she's not just out for herself and revenge. But I think we get to know her a little better later. But in this book, she's just kind of like, I'd say annoying because she won't listen and keeps trying to run away and trying to get herself killed. But then there's also like there's magic to her as well. Like she doesn't feel pain. What's that about?
Yeah. And heals quick.
Right. She a vampire?
And she's colorblind.
Yeah.
That's magical.
Okay, Cross. You tell yourself that.
I liked Pharaoh. I liked her right away, though. Yes, maybe a little bit shallow as far as motivations go right away, but the motivations are strong. And the passion is totally, totally there. So I agree. Much more one note than the rest of the characters that we run into for the most part. But I think because of the intensity in her hatred and need for vengeance, I think it kind of worked for me.
And how old is she? Do we know?
She seems to be like 20 somethings.
Okay.
Like early mid 20 somethings.
Because like her attitude and stuff makes me think she's like even younger, but then she has a longer backstory. So it's like she has to be at least 20 somethings.
Yeah. I've always had the perspective of that she is like somewhere between like 22 and 25. She's not that old, or 20 and 25, just because we don't get like a ton on her immediately here, but we knew that she becomes at like a young age, she becomes a slave to the emperor's son, who then, you know, becomes the emperor.
Mm-hmm.
So, vengeance. Yeah, I've always had that perspective at the very least. She also introduces us to our second Magi and one of my personal favorite characters in this initial book, Yulwe, of whom is just a sweet man doing his best.
Jangling around.
Yeah, with a rambunctious child. Gives us a different kind of side and view of magic as well, compared to Bias, of whom we'll kind of get into with the rest of the Union. I don't know, what do you guys think about Yulwe on the whole?
I think my favorite scene with Yulwe is him at the gates when Pharaoh's in the standoff with West, like waiting to give up her knife. And he just yells like, I'm an old man. Give up your knife before I fucking die.
He's so over it.
He's totally over it. But he's sweet and he's like, he's got a great motivation behind him. Maybe. He seems to. He seems to genuinely care for Pharaoh. To now understand that he was interested in her because of her innate sort of inability to feel pain, and strictly bringing her to Baez and then fucking off back to the other side of the circle of the world. I don't know anymore, but seemingly he makes Baez swear to protect her and protect her better than the Maker's daughter.
Which,
know.
Yeah, that felt like a low blow.
Yeah, totally.
No, I agree with all that. I think he has good intentions. But I also like you said, Cross, that you it's like a different kind of magic. He's like stealthy and understated, and Baez is explosive and more dark,
forceful.
I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Yulwe has like a gentler hand in the way he does magic.
Yeah, and I think that that's particularly like a powerful representation, especially since we really only have two like people that we ever see do magic of any kind so far in the story. So it's nice to kind of get those flavors and have them be so opposite. His main mechanic here, of course, like you guys have mentioned, is, you know, bringing Pharaoh into kind of the fold for the next story here, as far as the end of that goes. But he also gives us a little bit in the way of history with Baez, and ultimately with her, and like as a motivational piece, he's like, I saved you from the eaters and otherwise, and saved her twice, actually. You come with me as a part of this deal. It's almost like a deal with the devil to some degree, because like she doesn't really know what she's getting into in the long run.
Right. Like, what does carrying the seed mean?
Yeah.
What it's could like, that... It's like Frodo, except she can't feel all the pain and strife.
Yulwe. What a great guy.
Jangling around.
Bebopping about.
He's barefoot, right?
Yeah. Because everywhere barefoot.
A little hippie. I will say, too, about Pharaoh, she's a badass fighter, and that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the scene of her fighting back against the eaters and then, like, killing all of those Gurkish on horseback, where she kills, like, four of them with arrows in the span of what feels like 2 seconds, is just such a great scene on the whole.
Yep. She's Katniss Everdeen with her bow.
Yeah. With piss yellow eyes.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on from Pharaoh, that brings us to the Union. And the Union, we've got a ton of characters to talk about. This is, of course, where kind of a bulk of things come together for us. We have, of course, our primary POV throughout this. We have Jizzal. Our secondary POV, we've got West. We've got West's sister, Artie. We've got everyone surrounding the contest. We've got the king. We've got Ladislaw. We've got kind of a lot of the political pieces. And then also Baez, even though he's not necessarily, well, he is on the closed council, so we'll call him a member of the Union. But, you know, he's also the first of the Magi. So, yeah, a lot to talk about here. Maybe we start with Jizzal and then start to unravel the rest of the Union.
Your favorite.
And Glockta. I forgot Glockta, part of the Union. Yeah, I love Jizzal. Look, I get it. He's whiny. He's a brat. He's totally a brat. But I honestly think that like his perspective and the way that he actively changes and the way that he also swings back and forth emotionally is just so real as a person to be like that type of mad where you're like, well, fine, I'm not going to do that. And I fucking hate all these people and they think that I should do that. Like, that is such a real like arc of internal anger that it's just great. I love his depiction.
Yeah, he's like a spoiled rich kid, but he has no path because he's not the eldest son. So he's just like the trust fund baby that doesn't inherit the business. And you're like, what are you complaining about? You have so much money. But with
you're
that,
doing
you
great.
You lack purpose. So, yeah. Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. He kind of does.
Feels very immature, even in that sort of progression. But then again, he is immature. He is very young. Younger than he ought to be for the station that he has, because it was explicitly and understandably purchased for him. So I can totally understand and agree with you in that progression.
But yeah, I think Artie is good for him because everyone always is sucking up because of who his father is. And then she comes along and just like doesn't like him. And he's like, you know, that's what makes him want her more. Is because he's never had someone like treat him badly.
And treat him as he should have been treated. You know what I mean? Like
treat him as the brat he is. Makes him grow up.
And put
a
him in
bit.
His place. Yeah. Yeah, what were we calling him? Nepo bigot, right? That's the term. A lot of the union folks are just Nepo bigots because, like, you know, they inherit their positions or they buy them and then they, like, look down upon, like, lower class folks. So mm-hmm. that, like, leads them, you know, into this space. Very similar to space racists and whatnot, spacists.
And somehow, in their own Cross, regard. He's your favorite character. What's
you know
that
what?
Make you?
As I said, I was being a devil's advocate. Yeah, so Jizal's quest throughout this story predominantly revolves around his position in training for the contest. So the contest being this big duel, of course, and he trains with a number of characters, the first and foremost being Marshal Varuz, of whom teaches him kind of how to fight and the basics therein, but then also Major West, of whom is sort of his, not only like friend, but the captain immediately of his militia, the brother of Ardy, and sort of the a central figure kind of in this story to some degree. So how do we feel about West?
Well, I liked him and then I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the last bit of West has completely tainted everything that I think about West, and it's hard to even remember.
I mean,
what
I
thought
Joe
about him before that.
Abercrombie did a good job of like
totally
showing the pressures that were building and building and building, and then he like snaps. But yeah, you still can't beat up a woman.
Yeah.
Bro. But yeah, Major West, I think, was definitely always like the bigger man because he had to struggle to earn what he had. He came from an abusive father and is a commoner, and you know, I think his rise seems more earned than Giselle's.
Yeah, and he's a fellow winner of the contest and generally an advocate for things that are good, but obviously has a sort of darker side to him. Speaking of darker sides, let's go to Glockta, the darkest of them all. He actually fucks people up pretty seriously, yeah, and we're okay with him.
And we love him. I mean?
Yeah, that's because
you guys are
both
like,
oh,
my favorite character.
Crossland.
Yeah.
He tortures innocent people, but that's okay.
That's okay. We forgive that.
They're people suspected of dodging the king's taxes. And if there's anything I hate more, is people... I can't even keep a straight face thinking about
people
saying
who
this.
Don't pay their taxes deserve to have their teeth pulled out.
Slowly whittled down.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so Glockta is one hell of a character. I mean, all around. It's almost impossible to sum him up in any sort of singular, you know, kind of tight phrasing. But an ex-war hero turned torturer after being tortured, of whom ends up rising in the Inquisition, likely because he inherited skills from seeing the worst of humanity and then passing that on to his victims, but then also pretty restrained and inquisitive in a genuine way, where the rest of the Inquisition just seems to kind of do what they're told, but he seems to be poking at deeper mysteries.
Yeah.
Yes. Like the bank. Also, yeah. I'm pretty sure the new people in the Inquisition are all eaters, but I can't remember. But I'm like, they're infiltrating because they're like, with the autopsy, they're like, it's dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Woof woof.
Dogs.
Like, yeah, those are eaters. I don't know. I'm probably wrong. Yeah, Glockta, it's just like the self-hatred coming out. He's like, while he's torturing people, he's like, look at me. You know, I didn't deserve this, so I guess I'll do it to you.
You didn't either. Cut, cut, cut.
Yeah, yeah. And just his inner sarcastic monologue is so funny.
So what's interesting to me is how, like, logical and calculating and cold and analytical he is in general, but he has some really severe blind spots when it comes to that sort of thing. And it seems like he is unable to put aside his feelings for the Union in general. And it seems like he starts to question Inquisitor or Archlector Salt a little bit in his mind, but it takes a lot of twisting before he's actually like willing to confront that himself. And it, even then, it's not super deep. So for the most part, he takes everything that's given to him by the state at face value, and everything else is scrutinized and interrogated very logically and coldly. So it's a very fun character. It's very faceted and well written and created.
Body found floating by the docks.
Yes. There's an aphorism that is that an aphorism or is that just a refrain?
Dark thought.
I think that's more of just a refrain. Yeah, that is a dark thought. That's an invasive, intrusive thought that he has constantly.
Like, he kind of like wants to die, I think. Mm-hmm. That makes him not as scared of death. Because like, death would be easier than his life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think sometimes he's thinking, they could just kill me and then it'd float away.
Yeah. Yeah, if only I could die, he often thinks. And obviously, I've oft used the refrain of the click, drag, tap that he has going on anywhere he walks. Uh-huh. As he takes those,
he's like Igor,
steps forward. Mm-hmm.
And the stairs, his arch enemy.
The stairs, his enemy, the stairs, which is like our first introduction to the man too. And what a fun note that is.
He's great.
Any thoughts on any of his torturing that he did? The torturing.
I think he's good at his job. It was interesting he's a high achiever. It was interesting to see in the trial, like we kind of get a preview of him repeating the same thing, like training the victims to confess based on like what he says, kind of like, you know, Pavlov's dog. Like he's like training them to respond in the exact same way. And then I can't remember all three of their names, but the last one is like, yes, the Inquisition, yes. Like, he's like ready to respond. So he's getting the live confessions that Salt asked for.
I mean, obviously, even that crowd is not convinced of the legitimacy of their testimonies.
But no,
can you imagine if that was like on like broadcasted on like, yeah, what's the
Judge Judy?
What's the on PBS? Like if there was just a PBS here or like broadcast of a Senate hearing.
But Giselle even thinks to himself like, traitor, oh my god, I can't like I can't believe he's a traitor. That's terrible. Like
he met with my dad.
Yeah. Oh no. I hope they
don't remember.
What does
this mean for me?
So maybe they do believe it.
Yeah, he's a dangerous fellow, that Glockta. He's a oh boy. And he really, I mean, like with everything that he's got going on, Hornlack, I believe, is the guy that he, you know, tortures to become that person in front of everyone else. But to sell out Colt, if I remember correctly. Magister Colt. And that leads us to kind of one of the central questions of sort of Glockta's whole arc, which is that of where the money is coming from, the sort of secret behind the university, and kind of what's going on also overseas and kind of internally. And Bias is maybe the biggest secret of them all that he's forced to explore and verify that he's a Magus and whether he is who he says he is, which I think leads us to Baez. We should maybe talk about that guy a little bit.
Baez. He's like cool and also terrifying. he's a grumpy guy.
He's cool and terrifying, but he's also like kind of slimy.
Yeah.
And hard to relate to.
I mean, like any wizard, right?
And I mean, he's almost godlike. Because he's been through all these different time periods and held all these different roles and he's trying to like guide, you know, the way the wars are won and the way the world goes, fighting evil and all that. So yeah, he you can tell he holds himself above mere humans, you know. He's like, I'm not doing parlor tricks for you guys. Like, I'm way above that.
Way beyond parlor tricks, as he then smashes the chair anyway, because he's like, fuck it.
I feel like when that happened, I was like, I feel like Joe did that for us because we all wanted it so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, because salt sucks.
I was like, give us something. You got to prove it a little bit.
It's effectively attacking salt, too. And I was surprised that there was no, like, that's end of scene. There's no other, like, commentary on that act of like magical display at all, like totally just for us.
Mm-hmm. And then on that same note, there's also not really follow-up after they go into the House of the Maker. It's there's no, you don't see Glockta talking to Salt about like, yeah dude, it was pretty magical, we went inside, there was no ceiling, and we went up 4,000 feet without taking stairs. 4,000 feet.
And Salt's like, sure. Anyway, here's Vatari to join your other practicals.
I know. I like her.
Yeah.
I do think she's an eater. I don't know. I can't remember. But I feel like she needs to like eat someone to heal or something.
Aaron is so dangerously like ridiculous. I love it. BJ's got all kinds of information flying past him. Is any of it accurate?
At this point, I'm making that up because I really don't remember. Seems right.
I'm curious. So speaking of the practicals, I guess we should at the very least bring up Frost and Severard, of course, of whom are the undying practicals of... Or no, I mean, they could die. I don't mean that they couldn't die, but like the supporters, the unflinching supporters.
The two henchmen.
Yes, of Glockta, Frost and Severard. And I love the both of them for completely different reasons. I mean, yeah, they're so good.
I like Frost the best.
Frost is so good.
He's like Frankenstein with his pink eyes.
Frankenstein with a really delicate, like, He's funny. He has really intricate handwriting. Like, he just has half a tongue or whatever. So he can't speak eloquently, and he's a giant, so he naturally is going to crush the fucking skulls. But like,
I think I picture Severod a bigger version of Uncle Fester, maybe.
That we're talking about Frost, for the record. Severard's the smaller, weedlier guy. Yeah. Just making sure.
I said that I said it wrong in the Frost.
Yeah. Do you picture Frost as Uncle Fester?
Yeah. No. Who's the big one? Fuck.
Frost.
No, in Adam's Family. The big one, not Uncle Fester. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Well, it's... I do. Oh, Lurch. It's Lurch.
Lurch.
Yeah. I did have to Google the Addams Family because I could not remember names.
He's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he's like just there, but he like gets stuff done.
Yeah. I dig Frost. I think that he's like everything you guys have said. He's particularly though, he never misses a comedy beat, and Joe uses him frequently to punctuate comedy moments, which is just always great. Love that about him.
One of my nicknames for my rugby team was Lurch.
You should have known what I was talking about.
Yeah, you should have had that.
I didn't think about it.
And then Severard seems like slimy. Like, I feel like he could be up to something. He seems to know more about like what's going on.
But I think he is totally a mole for the Archlector.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Like, and Glockta's kind of trusting him to look into the bank stuff. And I'm like, can we trust him?
Yeah. And I mean, like, think about that conversation from before with Archlector Salt. Like, you've got two practicals. Can you trust them completely? And like, same for all of his staff. And he knows at that point already that the secretary is the one like leaking all of the information. Mm-hmm. So like, I felt like that was a test a little bit.
And then I wonder why Sevrod and Frost don't go with Block to Degaska.
They are.
Isn't it the redhead? Or they're all?
No, the rest of them are going. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's Frost and Sevrod, and then six other practicals, including the redhead.
Okay.
Yeah, all of Goyle's folks basically are going along. Superior Goyle. I'm thinking back. We've addressed a number of the things as it pertains, but the pour one out for our boy Ruse, or for the old boy Ruse, as he gets tortured throughout this book before being ultimately sent up north, and then, you know, the like whole situation with like West missing him and then realizing who he was again, and you know, like all of the people there.
And Glockt is like, oh, I think he's a merchant. Or something. Anyways,
he moved north. That guy? Did they yeah. Just sent him north, right? They sent them to the right. Prison camp.
Yeah, yeah. I think to Angland.
Angland,
which is, you know, now the front of a war too. So there's that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That'll do you.
That will do you.
Who else? Do all we have? Told. We haven't talked about Artie.
We haven't talked about Artie. We saved the best for almost last.
Artie likes to drink.
Artie does drink. Artie would be a patron of the podcast.
Yes.
Cheers.
I think she drinks out of boredom, though.
Mm. Totally. Totally.
I think there's a good part of it that's boredom.
Mm-hmm. And being abused.
I think some of it, PJ and I talked about this, some of it's like maybe a little bit of a coping mechanism, mm-hmm. and some of it is because her brother like hasn't allowed her to socialize, you know, to a certain yeah. degree either.
And some of it's like rebellion because her brother doesn't want her to drink. It's like, fuck you. Right. You're not a good brother.
Yeah. A rebel against all of the various males that she's had in her life try to put their thumb on the scale mm-hmm. of what she's allowed to do.
Did you talk already on the pod about whether or not you think Artie actually likes Giselle?
No, that's a great thing to bring up. No, PJ thought that she was a witch for a while, that she was magically enchanting him.
You're a witch.
Yeah.
And that's West, funny. For that matter.
And West, yeah.
You thought West was a witch?
No, I thought she was enchanting him, too.
How so?
Anytime anything came up with Artie, in general, like, people's emotions got all out of whack. Between West and... Giselle's and Glockta's, like it was always a super intense emotional reaction to anything about Artie.
PJ, that's just because it's the only woman in their lives.
I think it was
Glockta has Casper. His mother.
Yeah, Glockta does have his mom, of whom sucks, by the way.
Yeah, not a good mom.
Yeah,
not a bad prevented mom. Prevented
West and Glockta from being friends, and perhaps Glockta from becoming an Inquisitor. You know, in the long run, maybe. You know. Crazy thought there.
So I guess in that respect, she is a witch, but not in a magical way, just in the normal being a woman way.
Just in the normal way.
I'm going to tell your wife. He said you're a witch. I think that Artie is looking out for like her future, and she doesn't actually like Giselle, but she knows that he's for money, and she can tell that she can manipulate him. So I don't think she's actually interested in his mind or spirit. I think she's like, he's a nice guy. He would never hit me, and he's rich. So that's good enough.
I think it'll be telling whether or not she... like, if we get... I'm hoping we get an Artie point of view in the next book. Or some other point of view in... God, why the fuck do I keep forgetting the name of this fucking
Adjua?
In Adjua. I remember Agriant.
There you go.
Yeah, Acreont is the inner citadel.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I know.
It's like the castle.
So if we get in another point of view in Adjua that covers Artie, okay, that's fine. I'd prefer to get an Artie point of view. And I think that'll be telling to whether, like, how she actually feels about Jizal, if she actually actively seems like she's waiting for him to come home. Because I think if it's all show, and if it's all like self-serving interest, I don't think she'll actually wait for him in the way that he asked her to.
But she might not have better options.
That's true, but she'd look for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Potentially. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. Who knows? Only the future can tell, PJ.
I think who knows is... Joe Abercrombie and the book over my shoulder. And you, motherfucker.
Dear listener. No, yeah, I know. I do know. Oh. And wield ultimate power.
This is why it's good to not remember things, because I should know. But
yeah, it is kind of fun to have you on for these like early book episodes.
Like, I know you've read all the books, but I know you won't remember.
Did you read Age of Madness? I forget. Did you read the final trilogy?
You tell me, Cross.
I genuinely don't remember.
I've been tracking stuff in Goodreads now just to...
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, if you own all three audiobooks, I would assume.
Oh, that's a good point. I think the Best Served Cold? Is that the middle trill?
Yeah, that's from the middle trilogy. A Little Hatred would be the first one from the...
Oh, I think you told me to keep going, and then I...
Yeah, for some reason, I feel like you finished with Red Country, took a break, then we're going to come back.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I got to catch
up. Which is also what we're going to do on the podcast, but...
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Cool. All right. Well, that brings us through most of the characters on the whole. I'm trying to think of if there's anyone else... One of the big components or proponents of the story or things that I really love about it is the sort of centering around like the mythology of this world, right? We get a lot of loose details. There's a lot of questions about, you know, Canadius, Juvens, you know, obviously Canadius being the maker. There's Baiaz, there's all of the Magi, there's Yulwe, there's the Gurkish Empire, there's the history with
Malakas Qui.
Yeah, we did skip over Malakas Qui. Yeah, he's easy to skip over. We also kind of skipped over like Beth-Od and Calder and stuff like that. But they're minor right now. They're kind of background, you know.
We haven't actually met Beth-Od.
Mm-hmm.
We did. Yeah, he's in one chapter.
Really?
Yeah, he's in one chapter with Baiaz and Logan. Remember?
Beth-Od?
Remember in part one when. Back in part one.
No, I thought
when
that
they come and meet.
That was his
no,
son.
No, so first it's one of the sons, and then the second time it's the other son and Beth-Od.
Because
the first time it's Scale. Or sorry, the first time it's Calder who meets on his own and then gets shoot off. And then Scale
Beth-Od
and Beth-Od
says, I should have killed you.
And then he goes, I gave you two gifts in the winter and one in the summer or something like that. Or two, yeah, whatever the hell it was. Oh, yeah. But Baiaz goes on like a big old, you know, spooky mage.
Yeah.
Moment.
And he's got his own witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a witch. That's Conniel. A witch.
Yep.
We found
I forgot
a witch.
About that entirely.
Do witch.
Me too.
He's going to come back book. To fuck shit up. I'm sure.
Yeah, she's not.
Put that
lady.
Down as a guess.
Okay. Connie'll gonna fuck shit up.
Connie's gonna fuck shit
well,
up.
Baiaz even says like she's more powerful than she seems.
In addition, yeah, because she's got the long eye, right? Or seems to. In addition to the voice.
Of the Jesuit.
Yeah, the Bene Gesserit voice. What was I gonna say about there's also the big fucker that shows up in court, right?
Oh,
that
could be armed.
Yeah, the feared.
Yes.
He's like half purple. There's your Frankenstein.
And he just like sticks a knife through his forearm.
Mm-hmm.
And like stands there like this.
And he goes, England!
England!
Yeah.
Okay.
So good.
PJ, you're the feared.
I'll take
yeah.
it. You're not I'll, be, your I'll head. Be the feared. I need to yeah. tattoo like all of Fruits my body.
And turn half purple.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just blue ink tattooed basically over every inch of his body, right?
Half yeah. of him, right?
Half, yeah.
Okay.
He's got something a good like half that. And a bad half.
You pick which is which.
Yeah.
Hmm. Is it
yeah.
either way?
Like horizontal?
So you were talking about
is it like
the
horizontal?
Horizontal. All right.
I just what? Like the myth of the world, the myths of the world, the magic, you know, kind of all of it. So talking a little bit about the world itself, I'd love to explore your guys' thoughts on like how it's delivered to us, how it's given to us, sort of the thoughts on art, you know, spirit talking, making the whole kind of nine of it.
I've decided my left side is my bad side. I'm going to tattoo my left side.
Good.
I was thinking good. My right side, so.
We'll stand side by side and then it'll look really yeah. cool.
Yeah, we'll Frankenstein you together and you'll be a really lopsided fearless.
So for the magic, I like that it is not explained. It's just like talked about, like you should know. I like that. I prefer that to like a Brandon Sanderson or someone who's like, this does this and this does this, you know. It's not over descriptive at all. It's just you accept that it's there and you learn as you go.
All I want is understanding of how it all works and what the limitations are and what the
that's
rules
are.
It's
because you're an engineer.
And you're an architect, which is, you know, ultimately the two sides of the coin.
Just, it's all feelings, DJ. It's all art.
Yeah.
The building doesn't need to stand. It just needs to look good on paper.
You don't need to understand how it stands. It just does.
Of the yeah. rules that we get, I appreciate them. I like that there are segments and focuses that must be adhered to and taken or studied. It is making me so badly want to reread everything Lord of the Rings. Like I think that's the best thing that I can say about this is about this magic system is that it's very evocative of Lord of the Rings and
it's like real world, the same similar feeling time period, and then there's like magical people that just live among the normal people.
Yes, and the magic system itself being so loose, I guess, but confined. Confined to a few very special individuals. And like, it seems like there is an internal logic to it. It's just not so starkly defined or confined. So I like where
yeah, like Baez gets drained after using magic, you know, very clearly. Like he visibly looks like a little bit older for a while and seems wiped out. And then, you know, in addition, he doesn't kind of draw upon, you know, bigger things seem to wipe him out more, as we've seen. You know, small. He sweats a lot. He gets real sweaty. Sweaty guy. Probably takes so many baths.
Why, he's bald like Santa Claus. Yeah, that is interesting. Baez seems way more affected. Like, he had to blast that eater out of the tower, but then Yulwe just, like, melts their bones and is like, let's keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, there are different approaches to tackling the eaters as well was wild. And I mean, I feel like I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the first law, the namesake of the series, as well as the second law as a part of this larger sort of mythology. As far as like rules go to some degree, those are more like codes or laws in some ways. But what do you guys make of the two laws as we're presented with them?
So first law is don't eat the flesh of men. What's the second law?
No, the first law is don't touch the other side. Oh. Don't interact. Don't touch the other side. The second law is don't eat the flesh of men.
So the Magi and the eaters are breaking those laws.
Yes, in order to have access to magic, which is like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder
what was the point of the laws?
Touching the other side has a definition that's been lost in time a little bit. Like, even to Baez, even to the Magi, if it's something deeper than that, or if they truly are breaking the first law in using their powers, I think it's more interesting that they are breaking the first law. But I could see it being a misunderstanding or mistranslation, misinterpretation of the first law. And there's something more specific that they shouldn't be doing before breaking that.
Or maybe their order of Magi is just exempt. Or they like have to break the law in order to like save the world from the evil.
Mm.
Like the Avengers. But like, yeah. Evil.
Yeah, they're like a little evil. Like Baez is a little evil, you know.
Does Logan break the first law by fire breathing and talking to spirits and things?
It's important to note that those laws apply to art, which is the sort of magic.
Yeah,
spirit talking seems
doing?
To be a different seems to be a different thing.
Spirit talking,
they
but
they seem like fairies.
Spirit absorbing and breathing out in
he was
a different
just saving
form.
It for later.
It's all spirit talking.
Okay.
He's just saving it for later.
PJ, just accept it and move on.
Just smile and nod. Smile and nod. Yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes sense.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The different well that he's tapping into.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
Obviously, cannibalism is bad.
That's just a general, that's a good rule. That's actually like one of the first rules over here on this side. Yeah.
Probably don't eat people. I guess unless you're on a raft in the middle of the ocean and your friend already died. Then it gets
Or if you're on a very specific diet. Yeah.
Jesus. I'm just kidding. It's called keto.
I was just going to make that joke. I was just going to say the same thing.
Oh,
we're
man.
Too close, Aaron.
Yep.
you do share the same brain.
We're the yang to Cross and Ben's yin.
True. I'm feeling it. I'm missing my yin. And then Thomas is centering essence of like, yo, guys, we got to move on.
Yes. He's the center of the world.
Yeah.
The house of the maker.
So some other central things. Obviously, there's the plot of the contest. The contest goes the way that it does, which is all taking down Brevardag Gorse with the assistance of Baez, although he doesn't know that, as he's emboldened and empowered in the moment, in addition to Baez maybe taking control of his sword at different times.
Mm-hmm. Do we know why Baez wanted Giselle to win so badly?
No.
Cool. Nope. No one knows.
A bet?
Hmm.
I think it was a bet.
But was it more than that? It seems like he needed him to be the champion in order to like have him come with him on his quest.
Yeah, that seemed like it. But I'm trying to think of why he needed him to be the champion. Like, why he needed Giselle on the quest.
Right. I don't remember. Your guess is as good as mine, PJ.
Mm-hmm.
He just seems like an add-on.
Gorst feels like he could have just as easily have been...
Maybe
so there's
got to
be something. Maybe it's his father's influence and connection.
Mm.
But Giselle as an individual doesn't seem particularly that important.
Not really remarkable.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just kind of a dude.
He's kind of never seen anyone die before. And then he saw a man exploded.
Yeah. Speaking of moments,
have you seen that art, Aaron?
The art?
Yeah,
yeah. So there was some art that was done for a collector's edition.
Crossland, where did
series.
You post? What?
I'm just gonna text it to Aaron because it's easier than going through the channel roulette. But that's the image of Baez from the Curious King collector's edition. After,
oh my god,
in the moment.
Nice.
Rendered by the incredible Tommy Arnold. I highly recommend. Yeah,
he's exploded.
Yeah, that person is gone.
And now Bios needs another bath.
Not all of them.
Not his boots.
Yeah, there's some bits and some boots, yeah.
Cute.
Boots just fell over. But wonderfully rendered and did a number of the characters in different moments and scenes that just look incredible inside of the book on the whole. So look great, feels great. I am curious as to what your guys' favorite moments were in the book on the whole, particular.
I like Logan Nine Fingers looking around and gaping at everything. First time in a city. I think my favorite sequence was in the House of the Maker. I thought that was almost touching on horror, almost like the, oh, don't go down that pathway, will lose you forever, you know, House of Horrors, but there's nothing in there. The mystery. And
very cosmic horror, yeah.
What's the heavy box? We don't know.
I'm sure I can be persuaded in many different directions, but my favorite scene off the top of my head right now is the river ambush scene in the Dogman's perspective at the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, when Orly's head falls out of the bag.
Yeah. The confrontation, the fighting, the resolution of it. It's so cinematic and emotional and just very strongly written and executed.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. I think one of the moments that stayed with me the most from this book, this is going to sound like so ridiculous, but is that very first chapter. I love the intro to Logan, to the entire idea, to the flatheads, to like falling off the river, to like that shocking moment. And I would include like winding up from the end, which is sort of that first prologue before the actual book itself starts, into his actual first chapter, right? When he manages himself up out of the river, gets to the pot, packs up all of his things, thinks about his friends. And there's just something so lovely about that first kind of moment getting you into the story that I just really, really appreciate.
Yeah, it's and memorable, by God, for sure.
If the adaptation starts any other way, I'm going to be so mad. It's a perfect start.
Just have him going over the edge with a flathead biting his leg.
Well,
yeah. Adaptations, he fights him for a second.
Adaptation starts with book 4, right?
Well, yeah.
The adaptation of this book.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. When they get to the first lawn, whatever way they do, I want this to be present. So it does make me feel very happy that they're starting with my favorite of the stories as the first adaptation, because it is the best standalone, in my opinion, as well. So to get a movie of that, it's great. Okay, cool. Well, I think all of those are wonderful moments. None of us said anything about Jezahl, so that's good, I guess. Or Glockta, actually. But I'm so glad that we're getting to kind of cover the series. Do you guys have anything else immediately that you're thinking of or that's like top of mind that you want to talk about?
I'm trying to figure out a way that Glockta ends up with
the future
our band,
series, right? Yeah. What the hell am I thinking?
Of adventures. And like, I think it'd be really cool to get a situation where all of our perspectives collide and we just have all of them together. I don't think that happens in the next story, but I'm curious if that happens going forward. But I also think that we're going to get more perspectives after this. I don't know.
You know what? I forgot to bring something up. Fuck me. We'll come back to this like end question in a moment here, and like future positing question. The king and the princes and like the entirety of the closed council, right? Like that's a whole debacle in and of itself. The situation of the union, as it were. How are we feeling about Guslav and the crown princes?
I mean, it seems like pretty clear that Guslav is not well respected amongst the rest of the close council in general.
Feels like he's too old and maybe they should have an age cap.
I don't think he's even that old, though.
He seems pretty fucking old.
No, he's just inept.
Oh, I feel like he has like dementia and he's old as fuck. That's how I see him.
Yeah, I think he has dementia, but I thought he was in like his 50s. Like, I imagine him as like a middle-aged, like early onset.
I'm thinking
dementia.
80s, man. He's like 1 foot in the grave. I don't know. Do we know?
I just saw him as like a disaffected. Or
I think he's described as like having a baby face. So I'm not sure that he's that old, but I mean, then again, he's pretty useless. I mean, no matter what way you look at him.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like his sons, the princes, were like Jazal's age. So
like
I,
in their thirties.
I felt like the sons were in their mid thirties. I felt like he was in probably his
Jazal's
like
25. Jazal's like 25.
Okay.
But yeah.
Then I'm being generous. Like I felt like he was at best his early 60s.
Either way, though, he doesn't know what's going on. And he's
no,
asleep.
For sure. Pretty fucked.
Yep. It seems like they need Baez to come whip them all into shape.
Yeah. Reynald and Ladislaw. Ladislaw being, I think, the immediate inheritant, and Reynald being kind of the fuck. It's just sort of the way of the world at the moment. So, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking to the future then, and kind of what you're thinking about the next step in the story. You're wanting to see everyone get together, Glockta, kind of everything like that.
I think I really enjoy like the adventure, and like we're all going on a quest to just like being on the path, you know, and traveling together, and I like that stuff.
I do kind of like having Logan and Dogman and the rest of them separated and not knowing that either of them are alive. Like, I think it makes for a really interesting and like dramatically ironic storytelling device. So I'd like to see them stay separated for at least a little while. I'd like to see the Dogman and crew interact with like West, like call him West, and learn maybe that Logan is alive, but let Logan still believe that everybody is dead. But I'd like to, I don't want them to just suddenly be reunited, because I think it'll make for, like, I think Logan having lost all of his companions has made him a better person, or seems to have made him a better person. So I want to let that solidify a little bit longer.
Cool. I'm so excited. I can't, we're at like, we're fully at the beginning. You know, this book is a little bit of a, like, it definitely feels a little bit more like a prologue. It's similar to, you know, the Fellowship in a way, where it's, you know, like the quest is not the quest yet. Now we're about to begin the quest, as it
were.
Right,
right.
So it's very exciting, kind of the prospects that we're staring down, and I can't wait to chat about it more. Yeah. Erin, did you have anything else in your notes that you wanted to?
No, we covered all the notes. Just love the audiobook and excited to read book two.
Once again,
let me know.
Are
when
you
going
to go through and do them all?
Well, let me know when you're close to the end, and I'll hop on it.
Hammer it out. Hell yeah! So with that, thank you again, Erin, so much for joining us here. Next week, we're going to be putting out our Dune special, part two, with Tim Olson, which is lovely. We already recorded it at this point. It is super long. We're trying to figure out how to edit it. It might be two episodes. I don't know. It's 4.5 hours of
it's a long
it's longer than
raw audio.
Dune.
Yep. We could not stop talking about it.
It's a good fucking movie. Go watch Dune 2.
Yeah. If you haven't watched Dune 2, you could listen to us talk about it for almost double the runtime. For some reason, we just couldn't shut up. There is also, after that, we're going to be reading Before They're Hanged. We'll be starting the story, right, itself. The first episode there is going to be covering The Great Leveler through The Thing About Trust. So that'll be the first stretch of chapters. After that, we'll do one more Before They're Hanged episode. And then we've got our 200th episode special.
We've kind of
came up with an idea, and so we want to add that into the end here. We are going to be putting on our social media giant for the next several weeks, giant questionnaire. We'll also have it on Google Sheets for those of you listening, so that you can fill it out and add any questions. But basically what we want to do is we want to take any and all questions that you guys have and answer them on air. We don't care how ridiculous. We tend to like have moderated these things in the past to some degree, being like, we only want to discuss questions that are like, you know, based in the literary text. And so we don't want to like, you know, who'd win at a fight, the Reaper or the Sun, you know, kind of a thing. But, like, no matter how ridiculous, no matter how absurd, we want to hear the ridiculous questions. So send those in to us.
You can send them in to any of our social media accounts. Like private message us. You can email us at wordsandwhiskeyshow@gmail.com. You can join the Patreon and send us a message there. But we'll take it from any direction.
Free. You can join for free on Patreon and send us a message there. So, okay.
Aaron, you are a lovely, wonderful, beautiful, amazing person.
Hey, stop it.
Tell whoever's listening anything about you and how they can hear more of your amazing voice.
Thanks. Well, I'm on a podcast called Howler Pod. We're in the same podcast network as Words and Whiskey. And I co-host with Ben, and we talk about Red Rising. And then we're also on a lot of the Greenbone Saga episodes.
All of them.
All of them.
You could say all of them.
I think Thomas is missing from two. I think you're missing from one or two. I think Ben's missing from like three.
Cross, you were missing from one.
I was missing from one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm from all of, in all of them, I think.
You
I
was missing.
I don't think you did.
Okay.
I don't remember. Someone didn't miss any. It might be Thomas. Maybe I'm putting it on Thomas. No, Thomas had to miss one. Anyway, regardless, on Greenbone Saga as well. Aaron, what do we do to people if they don't leave us a 5-star review?
5 stars only. If you don't give us 5 stars only, then we'll leash the bloody nine on you.
That's pretty horrifying.
Yeah, that sucks. It really sucks.
Sucks for you. It sucks for you.
And that right, counts for people that don't leave a review, right? Like, you have to leave a 5-star review.
5 stars only.
Like, yeah.
5 stars or nothing, actually. But,
yeah. Okay.
But don't leave nothing, because then we'll also send the bloody nine.
Well,
after
if you leave nothing, then Glockta will pull your teeth out.
Until you leave something. There we go.
And then you get up to 5, and then you can move to Angland.
We're very up serious about this. We have your IP address, and we will find you.
I will find you. You will give me my daughter. Okay, cool. With that, we'll see you now that I've Liam Neeson'd right out of this episode. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.